Welcome to Inside the Food Biz. I am Ruben Torres, your co-host, sitting alongside Eric Remmela. And today we will be taking you on Eric's journey, on his story behind the scenes of everything that he has going on, and the confessions of a hotelier. So we're going to kind of get into this. You know, he's got a lot of knowledge of the food and beverage industry, and we're hoping to pull everything out of that and hope that the listeners gain some knowledge from Eric's background. So we're going to go ahead and get into that. And before we get into that, this episode is brought to you by Savor Cater. Savor Catering, we are here in South Bay, San Diego. We're recording all these episodes from the Savor Catering facilities here in South San Diego. So if you're in the area, hey, swing by, bring us some goodies. Come check out what we're doing, and let's see what we can do to work together and make the world a better place. So reach out, let us know what you got going on. Make sure you like and subscribe and rate the podcast here on iTunes. Anywhere else that you may see, make sure you also reach out to us if you got anybody that may be a good fit for the show that you think may be an interesting story for what we got going on inside the food biz. But let's go ahead and get into this with your host, Eric Remmela.
You're listening to Inside the Food Biz Podcast, where we bring you insightful culinary conversations with today's leading food biz professionals. And here's your host, Eric Remmela.
Welcome to the first episode of Inside the Food Biz. I am co-hosting today. My name is Ruben Torres. I am here with the host, Eric Remmela. And Eric is going to give us some insight on the food business, the F&B industry, and let us know what he has going on and the whole reasoning behind the Inside the Food Biz podcast. How you doing, Eric?
Hello, Ruben. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, I know this is something sudden that we just kind of came into, and I think it's going to be an awesome show. We've been talking about doing all this stuff for a while, and thank you for jumping on my idea. I keep throwing crazy ideas at you, and you're like, let's do it. So I love it. So for those that don't know you, kind of bring us up to speed on your background. You got a lot of experience, decades of experience in the food and beverage industry.
Gosh, he just aged me. I don't know. Decades.
Experience. You're a veteran. It's experience.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on that. Well, I've officially been in the food industry for now 36 years. Mm-hmm. You know, started in 1980 officially. That's when I started my apprenticeship.
That's about as long as I've been alive.
Yeah. That's why it's great. You know,
just aged you.
The reality, it started really much earlier. My grandparents have been already in the food business. They had what you call a charcuterie, and also sausages. They were making sausages, meat products, etc. And they had also part of their business was what is called a traiteur, which is basically the same as a caterer, except in this case on a smaller scale because it was a small village in Brittany called La Bossène. If anyone want to Google it, there's not much happening there anymore. You know, there's maybe 40 people living there, but in that day and age, in Brittany, France.
Okay, France.
Yeah. And there was actually a lot of going on then. There was a lot of, you know, animal trade shows. Mm-hmm. There were still horse carriages, mm-hmm. cows. And I did close to that. I did vacation when I was a little kid. And, you know, chicken were running around. It was very rural. Mm-hmm. And my parents also went into the food and beverage business. And they were running hotels. At one time, my mother was a gouvernante, which is a housekeeper at the Ritz in Paris, and my dad was like a night receptionist at the Browns Hotel in London. And Well, then I came into the world, you know, and they planted me literally into the hotel biz, mm-hmm. because I grew up in hotels until the tender age of 15. I was actually living in hotels. That's all I remember, you know, all my life. Then I had the crazy idea. Well, the crazy idea. I wasn't too fond of school. I mean, education is a very, very important thing, but I just wasn't too fond of school, and I decided to leave school when I was 18, on my 18th birthday to be precise, and start an apprenticeship at the Steigenberger Quellenhof in Aachen in Germany, which at that time was one of the top 10 hotels in Germany. And you know, I pursued to become a hotel manager. The apprenticeship for that was actually called Hotelfachmann. And I pursued that course, well, till today.
Mm-hmm. And so you came to the United States, and you was your first major hotel here, the Tower 23?
No, that was actually the Westgate Hotel.
The Westgate, and then Tower 23, and then back to the
Tower
Westgate.
23, and yeah, back to the Westgate, not immediately, but I'm sure we will find time to get to that part of the story. And well, the thing is, you know, after I did my apprenticeship, fortunately, I lived in Germany at that time, and I have to have multiple citizenships, and at that time I had the French, German, and British citizenship, and I found myself being drafted to the military.
Was that Navy?
It was. It was actually the Luftwaffe, so which is the German Air Force.
Nice.
And I found myself being, you know, running, you know, the Underofficers Casino in Geilenkirchen, which, if you would translate Geilenkirchen, it's kind of translate to Horny Town.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, like which Vegas? Everybody. Well, no, it's actually very small. It's surrounded by military. We were,
of course,
you know, they guard the Pershings, and but everybody makes fun of people coming out of Geilenkirchen in Germany. So what can you do? And after that, I left for England, where then I worked for the Britannia Intercontinental on Grosvenor Square, so which is in Mayfair, which is a very posh part of town in London. And there I went to become a night auditor and then assistant manager. And Intercontinental, I do have to say, in those days it was a different brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was more perceived as a luxury brand than it's today, and it was definitely not as diversified, you know, like with Holiday Inns, Indigos, etc., like it is
corporate.
You know, in our days, yeah, it was corporate, but not at that level, you know. And we also had a Marriott, you know, on Grosvenor Square, which at that time we didn't even consider competition because, oh, we're Intercontinental, you know, on Grosvenor Square. So I stayed there for quite a while, and then I moved on to the White's Hotel, which was an independent hotel on Kensington Gardens. And that was a smaller hotel, but I always wanted to go back into food and beverage, and this permitted me actually to become a food and beverage manager at that hotel. It was rather small, and I do have to say, after probably half a year, I really lost the interest because there wasn't that much to do. I mean, our restaurant, unfortunately, didn't have the type of reputation that people would just flock in and say we were very much perceived as a hotel restaurant. And I moved on to Trust House 40s, which at that time, if I remember right, was number one or number second largest hotel company in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trust House was just huge, and Charlie 40, who had founded Trust House was still alive. It was also a time where other, you know, like Conrad Hilton, and they actually were still alive, you know, and mm-hmm. the dynamics in the hotel industry was actually changing. They were acquiring more and more properties, you know, where before you had maybe 30, 40 hotels, you were considered super big, mm-hmm. and now suddenly, you know, they would have 100 hotels, 200 hotels, and that's really in the early, well, mid-80s when this all started. Mm-hmm. But all those hotel companies had what you call a flagship property. And, well, there it was, how shall I say, I totally ventured out of my comfort zone and went into airport catering.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little different?
It's very different. And I was the manager of the airport facilities on Terminal 2, which at that time was the most busiest terminal, I mean, in Europe. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a passenger flow, don't let me lie, average probably between 2,000 and 6,000 passengers an hour, which was mm-hmm. then a lot. And, you know, we had a huge bar, which was probably about 30 feet, you know, long, which in those times, you know, that was big. Yeah. I mean, now when you go to an airport and, you can't even see the end of it. Yeah, it's just all, you know, a little different.
And at this time, you transitioned into this new position, but were you already at the level where you knew, hey, this is an industry I want to stay in?
Well, the I would say overall, mm-hmm. you know, the hospitality industry was I wanted to do that. I felt very comfortable, especially with the clients. I think when you grow up in a hotel.
Yeah.
And every day you run into clients, I mean, from, you know, I remember clients when I was 5, 6 years old, I mean, still today, and it's, there was a certain magic to it, even, you know, if you are in your home, just happen to have 200 rooms, you know, and you get breakfast, lunch, and dinner served. You know,
and
that's a pretty
cleaned.
Good. Yeah, and everything magically cleans up and so on. Oh, God, if my mom hears that, she's going to be like, no, it didn't. Well, we know now, no, it didn't. Yeah. But as a kid, you look at it, and I would always remember, you know, The Shining. It was... you know, you have those long corridors, and, you know, I was like on a tricycle first, you know, and would just floor down the corridors, which my parents actually didn't like. But like kids do, you know, they seize opportunities. And so I was always known, you know, as the son of a director, you know, of the hotel. And my friends loved to come because we had also like an outside pavilion, and which was only open usually in the summer months, and there would be like you know, dinner dances and afternoon tea with dance and all those things that people today just don't relate to anymore because it doesn't exist. Well, there may be certain pockets where you will find that too, but it's not like
it's
like an era gone.
But it's not as common.
Yeah, what my friends would like is just me, you know, hooking up with them and then go to the pavilion, order some ice creams, and then, of course, I would get shit later by my parents. Say, what did you do? You know, you just more vials in here, you know, and just order. Because I felt like, you know, entitled to it. And unfortunately, I think they didn't do a good enough job telling me off because I would do it again and again. And that's also how you make a lot of friends, which I mean, you're really your friends, you know, full friends. But you learn that only much later in life. You know, why would a 16-year-old hang out with an 11-year-old? You know, come on.
Yeah, making some friends. So, being involved in what you're involved in, this opened up doors for you to kind of travel, because you've been all over. I don't know, all over the world, but you've been a lot more places than I have.
Well, so, you know, I mean, one thing is if you start your career off in the hotel business, like in Germany, well, they basically require you for, I mean, you make your apprenticeship the first 3 years, but then they really expect for you to move on. Mm. Or in my case, I was lucky, I got a banquet manager's assistant position on the convention center, which was attached to the hotel, to the Quellenhof in Aachen. But usually you start moving on. You go either Austria, Switzerland, France, England, are kind of the main countries you kind of move to, because there's not such a big language barrier. And in Europe, you know, there's always a couple of people, they speak Italian, they speak Spanish, yeah. And then you just go there. And in the hotel business, they love that you acquire that international knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because basically in the big hotels with good reputations, they want that international flair. Mm-hmm. And they like that you speak different languages. So, and for me, you know, I was lucky. I grew up speaking French and German, but I really could barely speak English. Yeah. That's where I made my decision, you know, to, after my military service, then actually to leave to England, start at a lesser position and work during the night. So I was able to go to language school during the day. And I would also stay every day in the accounting department, you know, because the number part of things always fascinated me.
Yeah.
So I did my English classes, I did my accounting, and the days were short, but at that time, you know, I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, we slept maybe an average of 3-4 hours a night, and that was plenty of sleep. And then London, man, you can party in London.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Oh, I tell you, at that time, you know, the nightclub was the Hippodrome. And you had Spring Fellows, and you had so many different venues you could go to, and there were a lot of live bands playing in smaller joints. And nice. You would go to, and I'm sorry that just crosses my mind, but I also was there when there was the King's Cross bombing. You know, and there were many victims there. And when you see what's happening now around the world and the people are freaking out, they say, you know what? Unfortunately, it happens. Yeah. You know, it happens during my time and so on, and maybe even more, because till 9/11, you know, the America had never experienced anything like we had experienced in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, there were bombings, I mean, in London, in Ireland. I mean, it was crazy when you really think that people, you know, Catholics and Protestants, you know, trying to bash in their heads, you know, in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, what's wrong with those people? You know, and believe me, they were as phobic as they are now with the Islamists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were, and both sides were Christians. So when you see with the Shiites, the Sunnis, so-called. And when you see the Shiites, you know, it's... Well, anyway, we weren't here to speak about that. No. So let's go.
So all that, at one point, did you say, okay, now I got to go to the United States and go make...
Actually, not the rest really, of not really. When I was on the verge going to London, I had actually an opportunity to leave with what's called the Gutenberg Stiftung to Cornell. I actually turned that down.
Hmm.
Some people are going to say, well, he's crazy. But I'm like, you know, I remembered my experience at school, and I know, me personally, in a classroom environment, I'm just not doing well. It's not my thing. You know, I want to participate. You know, I prefer to be the guy who tells people what to do than to listen to it and then sitting back and say, oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it sounds a little harsh, but it's really a little bit how it is with me and the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably what always pushed me, you know, to to even at a young age to take manager's position and just, you know, grow with those position, which sometimes it was so, how shall I say, where the job was maybe bigger than I thought the capacity that I had. Mm-hmm. But every time I was still able to grow into it, make the best out of it, and that's what I like, being mm-hmm. challenged. But sorry, I waved away from your question. So how did I arrive here? Well, I arrived here in the US with my ex-wife. We were actually living in Dubai and we're kind of at crossroads where we're going to go after Dubai. And that's where it was a very practical decision. I mean, it was just the beginning of the internet age and mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So modern communication, different than a phone or a telex or a fax machine. And my parents, when it comes to computers and so on, I mean, I would say they probably couldn't care less. And my ex-wife, Rachel, her parents both worked for AT&T. So, you know, they had a laptop, they had the internet, they had everything that now you so take for granted that then, you know, nearly 18 years ago, wasn't that common yet. So, but since we were in transition and I was actually, they wanted to build a training, Olympic training center in Seoul, and I was trying to negotiate a contract to actually become the F&B guru there, which fell through, but we suddenly found ourselves in a situation, you know, to be stuck in the US. And
stuck is such a harsh word.
It's a harsh word, yeah. But you know, you feel stuck when it wasn't the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
The plan was we stay in the US, you know, for as long or as short as maybe, you know, 3 months,
yeah.
You know, and I was totally unprepared to work in the US,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that sounds really weird, but I wanted to go culturally somewhere totally else, and and, you know, I knew America from movies and things like that, but I was never really attracted to the U.S. You know, I mean, yes, of course you want to go to the U.S., but that's not where I saw myself, you know, professionally. But then we went through the motion, and it was pre-9/11, of course, so things were a little easier, you know. We got the paperwork. I mean, we arrived in I think it was in February 98, I believe. And then, you know, in September, I had my working papers. I had everything I needed. And, you know, I like open the newspaper and they are, you know, searching for director of food and beverage at the Westgate Hotel here in San Diego, which was then one of the most prestigious addresses, right. You know, there. And I'm like, okay. So, but me not prepared, you know, for an American job interview, I didn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you apply for a director's position in Europe, you know, wow, okay, that's an important position. Mm-hmm. So you get to speak directly to the general manager or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I call, you know, the Westgate and they just say, yeah, please come to human resources and fill out an application. And believe me, I was not familiar with the process. So I go there, fill out the application, and basically waiting. And, you know, they look kind of at me and say, okay, well, we collect your application. Okay. Thank you very much. You're going to hear from us.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
You didn't expect that?
No, I really didn't. I really didn't. But anyway, things sometimes, you know, work. However, and but the same afternoon, the general manager actually called me and asked me if I could come back, you know, for an interview. So I met this gentleman, you know, Mr. George Hofilzer, and he had previously been the hotel manager of the Bristol in Vienna, which was, considered one of the best hotels in Europe. Mm. The Aga Khan used to own that hotel. It was top. But he looked at my resume and he literally knew every place I worked at. Hmm. Every place he was like, oh, you worked here, you were there, you were, yeah, great resume. And he said, hey, if you want to, you can start tomorrow. Then the next thing I wasn't prepared to is how America pays.
I'm sure a lot different, huh?
A lot different, you know.
So you end up coming here and you apply for Westgate, and what kind of process was that compared to what you're used to?
Well, I think the biggest issue I had, what I battled with, was actually my European upbringing. You know, it's actually as bad as here in America. You know, you kind of are brought up in an environment of a certain exceptionalism. Mm. You know, and, you know, it's like the French think they are the best cooks in the world, the Germans are the best managers in the world, etc., etc. So everybody has their thing, you know. Yeah. And here was, now suddenly I was not German, French, or whatever. I just was European and could not wrap my head around how things were done, you know, in the American, you know, hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. I had to, like, prove myself to every single employee that I was actually capable of what was written on my resume. Mm-hmm. You know, you go with a resume like that, you know, to a hotel in Europe, you know, people will automatically give you a certain respect. Not here in the U.S. You just have to earn it all again. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But at that point in time, I just wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't like, hey, what is this, anarchy?
Like, I've already been doing this.
I've already been doing this, you know, don't doubt me. So in a certain way, it was good because I had to prove myself again and earn the respect, you know, of my employees. And I would say that it took me about 2 years. And then, how shall I say, then suddenly I realized, okay, I have to stop swimming against the stream, but I have to take advantage of the current.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where actually I embraced America and what American stands for and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where really where suddenly the penny dropped and I was like, oh my God, this is actually a great country. There's so much opportunity, and the thing is, you're allowed to work. And that sounds really weird when I tell you that, but when I was like general manager of the Kurhaus in Baden-Baden, which is one of the 10 most prestigious F&B operations in Germany, well, guess what? If I would come in 6 or 7 days a week, they would actually record, you know, my presences. Mm-hmm. That meant when I actually then finally left the Kurhaus, I had nearly 3 months in a cured vacation and overtime. Wow. And you would think for being a general manager here in America, that's unheard of.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there are certain industries.
Yeah.
I won't mention any. Yeah. But
different areas.
Different areas. So that by itself was an eye opener. And then everything became, maybe I want to use the word easy. Mm. Because once you get for yourself that obstacle out of the way, you can actually concentrate on the real things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think the real fun began for me, you know, as becoming a professional, you know, food professional, you know, here in the United States. I mean, I stayed with the Westgate probably 8.5 years, and then, you know, when I left the Westgate, undoubtedly we were the number one hotel operation, you know, in downtown.
That's big.
That yeah, it was huge, and it was fun, and but you know, I got an offer I couldn't refuse, and I became general manager of Tower 23 Hotel in Pacific Beach, which was then the most cutting edge property in the whole city. And people were like, hold on, here you go from classic, from very classic traditional hotel business to a totally cutting edge building, lots of glass, stainless steel, granite floors, and very hip.
Trendy,
so on. And it's true, I was probably the only guy running around MPB in a suit, but you know what? My clients, I think, appreciated that because they directly knew, oh, okay, I can go to the guy. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you know, the clients were in flip-flop shorts and so on all the time, you know, if there is something, you know, let me call it not necessarily a problem, but there are problems, there are conflicts. But if they needed something done, they want to know who the person is.
Yeah,
you know, they can deal with, and you know, it gives you a certain authority, but it gives you also the okay, this guy is taking me seriously.
Yeah, especially walking around in a suit, you're going to be taken serious.
Yeah, well, level. You know, some MPB. Do, some don't, yeah. But they probably thought, who is that freak? You know, or you know, I like to wear escorts.
Yeah.
Which it's are very French non-traditional
thing.
Here.
It's the French thing to do.
It's the French. Yeah, it's the French or the British thing
and
to
so
do.
And you, so you've been at some of the top hotels here and been involved in the F&B industry here. Then you ended up linking up to do two previous radio shows, one with Chef Larry.
Yeah, it's actually, I came to know Chef Larry because we were both culinary advisors at La Mesa College. And he one day he invited me, you know, to join in at the Chef Larry show, you know, which was then, it was on World Talk Radio. And it was a culinary show, you know, where there was a lot of chef talk, and then I started going there one show, two shows, three shows, and suddenly I found myself in a position of a co-host.
Nice.
So, and I enjoyed it very much. And then, you know, I became a little more ambitious, and with one of the other co-hosts, which was Jamie Danielle, we started to do a luxury travel show, but that was kind of short-lived because we couldn't find enough time. You know,
That was a French show.
No, that was not the French. That was actually a luxury travel show. I mean, we did under 10 shows, so I usually don't mention it. But okay. that made me hungry for radio because I loved, you know, hosting the show, and. So I started a show with a friend of mine, Bernard Strive, which was Qu'est-ce qui se passe, which translates into what's happening. And you would be surprised how many French speakers are here in Southern California. We were actually the show in Southern California when it comes to French talk, and we had a lot of people from around the world which would join in or send us emails and just liking the show, and it was more a real lifestyle show. But you know, food was always part of it, hotels were part of it. When I say women, I don't want this to be judged as a sexist comment, but it was about, you know, we talked about relations, and we covered a lot of ground, and we had a couple of special correspondents, you know, from New York, from France, which was calling to the show, and I hope to resurrect some part of that, and I have already one gentleman, Yanis Tanis here, which worked for, oh my gosh, I don't know. Yanis, forgive me, but I think about 20 years for the Alain Ducasse group, and now changed to a new endeavor, which he will then tell you, you know, about what he's doing right now. But he is also a great food enthusiast. He loves to eat. He loves to drink.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love to eat, as you can tell. I'm a little fluffy.
That's okay. That's why we're on the radio.
We got to work on our TV shape. So it was a top French show, and then a show with Chef Larry. And now we're talking about doing this show inside the food biz. Tell me your ideas on what, when, where, and why.
What, when, where, and why. I think a lot went suddenly very fast in the past, you know, six months of my life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, before we get into that, let's talk about where we're at now. Here we are at the Saver Catering offices in South San Diego. And this is just the launch of the show, but... before all this, a couple months before this, you just moved into this building and things just started flourishing. Tell me about a couple months ago. Let's rewind to that.
Well, in a nutshell, my now business partner, Jose Antonio Carilla Ruiz.
Tony Ruiz, Chef Tony.
Chef Tony. You know, he called me and he said, Eric, this building is going to be vacated on February 1st. Do you want into business? Go into business with me. Well, I'd previously known Tony. But at that time, I probably totally totally underestimated. I don't want to see, but kind of underestimated of what we would let ourselves go into. Mm-hmm. We took... occupation of the building, you know, February 1st, and now we are June
something.
Beginning of July, really. But anyhow, so here we are. We have an operation. You know, we're already about at 850K, you know, year. We are growing fast. It's been incredible and so much fun,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think why we're sitting here today is because I was able to just let dreams come back alive.
Yeah, I think you always have that hunger to be still behind the microphone.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, I don't know if you can tell.
I love it, too. There's something about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is, I think, where we're... When you pitched the idea, you know, we were talking about this and I pitched the idea, hey, you know, why not that? I was immediately taken to it,
mm-hmm.
you know. It was like maybe the timing is a little bit early, but then I was like, you know what? Who cares?
It struck while the iron's hot.
Yeah, and the thing is for me, you know, being on the microphone always has it brings a lot of release,
mm-hmm.
of a lot of things, because you can sometimes verbalize things that you maybe wouldn't.
Yeah.
And what also happens is, you know, there's feedback, you know, from your listeners, and I think that's a part that I always enjoyed. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, good, bad, criticizing, negative, it's just about that you kind of create a dialogue.
Yeah.
And you also are able, you know, to share some information, you know, about things that listeners might never have heard of or didn't even come to their mind. And our business, and that's probably why we came up with that name, Inside the Food Biz, it's very, very complex.
Yeah.
You know, and when I see the Gordon Ramsays of this world, you know, I think they may be simplifying a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I go into the business, I turn it around, I work out again. Whoa. Yeah, I would love to have that magic wand myself.
A different kind of TV magic.
Exactly. Yeah. But there again, you know, it has a very high entertainment factor, and Gordon Ramsay definitely is a good chef.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing to say there.
Uh-huh.
What happens is when you diversify like they did, and even Alain Ducasse's do, and other big chefs, is, well, don't expect the chef to be behind, you know, the stove anymore, but expect that he has translated and his ideas and his knowledge well to his team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you go to a restaurant and you're just happy enjoying the food, because it's well executed.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot that that I know that you've talked about that you want to cover with the show, you know, and you've talked about inviting people from all walks of life when it comes to the food industry, the food and beverage industry, because you're talking about wineries and coffee makers and ice cream stuff. Like, you have all aspects of it, which I think should be recognized.
Look, yeah, and even you, look, you discovered totally new ice creams.
Yeah, yeah. It was
avocado ice cream.
Yeah, basil and strawberry, and it was awesome. But yeah. That's one of those things that I think, you know, when you're like, hey, let's do this and talk about the food industry. I think it's something that needs to be done, because there's so many people doing so many different things in the food industry. I mean, nowadays you got guys making tacos and they're doing tacos, you know, the taco guy at someone's birthday party. But even aside from that, like, nobody knows the business side behind that. Nobody, like your friend Plemy that came over here, like, what's the business side behind what she's doing? Because she's doing, you know, ice cream and coffee. Yeah. And I think it's such a complicated business, you know, industry, that I even asked you, I said, hey, you know, what about a restaurant? Have you thought about restaurants? And you're like, oh, no. You know, no, like, that's...
The restaurateurs of these world are going to love me. No, but it's right. I said, you know, there's many people which do it so well.
Mm.
They do the restaurant business incredibly well. One thing about the restaurant business is, like the hotel industry, don't be afraid of hours. You're going to spend a lot of time in your hotel. You're going to spend a lot of time in your restaurant. And you have to have a certain touch. You have to understand the numbers. You know, there's a lot of rheumatism attached to the restaurant industry. And like, we all love to eat. We are all food critics. And that seems to suddenly give also the entitlement, like, I know how to run a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, that restaurant opens up and it costs a fortune. I mean, when I see how much it costs now to open a restaurant compared, and I just say just a number like 20 years ago, I mean, I have the feeling that it's 10 times more expensive now.
Yeah, I bet.
To do that step than you
that
do
can't
now.
That can't be easy. Yeah.
Well, and now you have to see, you know, they weren't very special designs, and there's so much out there. And then suddenly, you know, a restaurant which was a room with table and chairs and had a nice ambience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough anymore.
Yeah, no.
Now you need the wow factor. You know, you enter that restaurant, you want to be wowed.
Yeah.
And you haven't even tasted the food yet. So, and usually it was really about the food. You know, it was, yeah, I mean, oh, this is a nice restaurant. People would say, that's a nice restaurant. And then they would go and, oh, this is good food. You know, oh no, that's a shitty food.
Yeah,
but now you can have shitty food in a gorgeous restaurant.
Yeah. And people still pack it out. Yeah.
And people will, yeah, well, it has become, how should I say, kind of a scene, but the scene moves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have enough traffic, I mean, in traffic meaning not enough people running up and down the street, or, well, in our today's world, you know, following social media and having all those, you know, everybody is a food critic and will post, you know, what they experience. Unfortunately, what they don't post is what grade of actually food experience they have.
I'm sure it's got to be.
And
it's hard when you criticize your own and somebody else comes in and criticizes behind you.
One of the things is, you know, which I think is basically true, is if everybody runs there, everybody likes the food, obviously you're producing good food.
Yeah.
But there's also sometimes a level of food, and that especially, you know, with the high-end restaurants where I don't know if I say that, but the thing is, your palate start developing, you know, and if like your whole life you eat very hot food, very spicy food, and so on, your palate will suffer. So if you would get a dish, what I call, is very, a soft, playful dish, you know, with natural flavors which overlay and then unfold, you might not test that,
mm-hmm.
because you're missing the tapatio.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, hey, that would be so much better with tapatio.
That's me. And I put tapatio on everything.
Yeah. And this is where it becomes hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that was maybe one of the reasons that El Bulli that closed, because they came to a moment of creativity where it started to be hard to maybe even understand what was going on,
mm-hmm.
you know, in your mouth. That, of course, all your senses are inclusive when you eat, but it's sometimes hard to coordinate if you get something which is like dried and you put it on your tongue and suddenly it kind of explodes in your mouth and there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
I say without a certain training and you might really be totally lost of what just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So and that's what I'm saying, like if you put a show like this together and you're inviting all kinds of different people and now you got someone that's promoting a restaurant, someone that's promoting a wine, and for some reason everybody is so romanticized with the notion of opening a restaurant or having their own business, being their entrepreneur, but not understanding the business side of it. Like it's cool to make your own wine and, you know, brew your own beers and make your own tacos at home or whatever, but it's a whole different thing understanding the business side of it. Is that one of the main reasons behind doing the show?
Oh yeah, definitely. And also, you know, to give some entrepreneurs or wannabe entrepreneurs, and I mean that in a good sense, entrepreneurs, yeah, you know, because they want to be, not the entrepreneurs which are wannabes, but you know, there's so much stuff out there, you know, that people, I think, are just literally not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And even I went through some of those motions. And I just want to give people the opportunity to dig in deeper. Yes, we have the internet. But if you don't know what you're looking for, you won't find it.
Yeah.
You know, if someone didn't trigger that, oh, okay, then you didn't even know that you had to look for that. And it's like we want to bring someone in from America Works, you know, on the program, to see how they can actually support through the government, you know, or it's, I mean, they have a certain product where they help to actually help employers to employ.
Mm-hmm. It's the the workforce partnership.
Yeah. Exactly. And these are things that I think many people are just not aware that that's out there. I wasn't aware. And when I learned about the program, I was like, oh my God. And yes, I want them to be on this program, mm-hmm. because I think they can bring so much to businesses, and not just small businesses, but in general. I mean, there are like programs out there, you know, I didn't know exist. Meaning, if there is a business which is actually closing,
mm-hmm.
they're going to come and try to relocate your whole workforce.
Yeah.
So imagine you have a business and for reason whatever it failed and suddenly you have 20, 40, 100 employees mm-hmm. which are going to be out of a job, but you know that that resource exists,
yeah.
that you can go ask that particular entity to actually help you to find jobs for yeah. those 20, 30, 100 employees.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah. And what Eric's referring to for the listeners out there that may not know, there's a program here in San Diego. It's called the San Diego Workforce Partnership. I believe that's the complete name. Mm-hmm. And it's a program that they help provide employment for those job seekers that are out there that that may want to get into certain industries. Savor Catering and SoCal Artisan Foods is partnering with them to help train and bring jobs together in the food and beverage industry. So what Eric and Tony are going to be doing here at Savor Catering, they're going to be training some people to get in, and they may not all of them get hired here, but some of them, you know, depending on the situation, they may get hired here at Savor Catering, right?
Is that
how it goes? And so the catering, they're going to learn the ins and outs of the business and the kitchen and the prepping and all that stuff. And then they can take that transferable skills somewhere else to a restaurant, another kitchen somewhere, start their own business or do whatever. But you want to lay a foundation for that.
Exactly.
Right? And there's a couple other businesses that you're also connecting with here.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like Sweet Cheeks.
Yep.
They have been now 9 years.
Sweet Cheeks.
Sweet Cheeks, you know, and they have a left and a right cheek, yeah, actually.
He didn't just call me Sweet Cheeks. It's actually a name of a business. Sweet Cheeks, I think baking.
Yeah, they do baking. Yeah. They do wedding cakes. They do bread, specialty breads, but, you know, like banana bread,
yeah.
et cetera. And they have been in business for 9 years. They're doing very well. They just got an award for best cake maker here in San Diego.
No, I'm hungry.
Yeah, and we are going to have them on the show too, because they went through also all those motions and they find themselves also at crossroads, mm-hmm. you know, like today, am I going to grow or am I going mm-hmm. to find another business model?
Mm-hmm.
And this is nice, you know, to just be able to discuss those things, you know, with other business owners to see how they found a solution mm-hmm. to the problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's always interesting because it's going to give you another angle, maybe an angle you didn't even think about.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, why didn't I think about it? Well, thing is, as a business owner, you get, of course, very consumed with your business.
Yeah.
And you forget to look to the left, to the right.
Mm-hmm.
What other opportunities or solution could I have? One big thing is you know, getting loans. Yeah. And I'm already looking forward, you know, to the shows where I'm going to have some banker sitting here and explain me. In big, you seem to know what their criteria are.
Uh-huh.
But in small, you say, well, hold on, you only want to give me money after I'm a year in business. Well, maybe I'm going to be out of business because you should have given me money before, you know,
yeah,
so I have enough working capital so I can realize the business I want to make.
Yeah.
So it's like really where the dog chases its tail.
Yeah.
But there are resources there also. Yeah. There are resources, you know, like the South County EDC.
Yeah.
You know, we got a loan for $50,000, you know, from them on the grounds because they thought we had a sound business idea.
And you do.
Thank you, Ruben.
And you do. It's solid. It's solid.
But this is also something that people might not know of.
Yeah.
You know, they go, the bank shuts the door on them. So what my next week, course, and there are other entities out there, but then what usually happens, your percentages go up, you know, mm-hmm. suddenly they're 8%, they're 14% even, and then you start thinking, ooh, you know, if I take a loan out for $35,000 at say 14%, you know, might be just a gap loan that you know that after 3 months you can pay back, but it's going to help you over the hump.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is important to know there are those resources out there. Time is always a factor. Unfortunately, it never comes fast, and usually there's a lot of paperwork involved. But even there, you know, with the guiding hand, you can work through this. You know, and there are many people out there which can help.
Well, what else do you expect to come out of this show? Like, what can listeners and other business owners and entrepreneurs, those that want to get in the business, what can they expect to get from listening to the show?
Well, I hope, of course, information. Some fun, you know.
To be educated and entertained at the same time.
Exactly.
Infotainment.
Yeah, but that's basically what this show is going to be about. But also, that if people have question and they don't find the right answer, you know, I would love to get those people on the table and actually talk to them. So, you know, if listeners do have question because they find the answers on the internet unsatisfying, which I'm one of them, you know, because sometimes, you know, the subject becomes like, dude, I have to speak to a living person. I don't understand what they're writing here.
I know how that is.
Yeah, to also involve these people into the show and just ask them here, look, one of our listeners is, you know, is asking that question. Of course, usually you want that question answered tomorrow.
Yeah.
But where would be the fun if you don't have to wait a week for it till the next show is on?
Yeah, anticipate it for next week. Till next week. And also, you're going to be doing, and you know, I know we just kind of threw this around loosely, but you're going to be doing a wine of the week kind of review kind of deal.
Also, you know, just a quick, because I don't want to hide this. Part of our show is also we always have wine of the week that we are drinking during the show, which usually helps loosening up our guests that we don't have at this show. And you would be surprised. I always did that also at Keski's Pass, and then the show becomes real fun.
It loosens everybody up and
gets all the smiles and suddenly down. You hear things that you didn't expect to hear.
Right. Well, and even this, out of my time, you know, being here at Savor and working with Eric, I haven't had any wine here with when it's 5 o'clock, and it's wine 30. You know, we call it wine o'clock and wine 30 around here. But Eric cracks open a bottle of wine, and I always usually say no. And today I'm enjoying my first glass of wine with Eric in celebration of doing the show. And you know, we're going to move forward. He's going to do wine of the week every week. And anybody else that wants to send in some stuff. So, you know, we will take some goodies. Anybody wants to send us some cookies and cakes and ice creams and coffees and all that stuff, send them to Ruben Torres at Siri.
I think someone is going to get carried away. He wants to make sure he's going to keep his chubbiness.
Yeah, I want to keep all the stuff that comes in. Send it my way, and I'll do the review on it, on all the cookies and all the baked goods. But so we're going to do it. It's going to be a weekly.
It's going to be a weekly
show, and how excited are you about this?
I'm pretty excited. Very excited.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. So for those that don't know, it's going to be a weekly show, Inside the Music Biz, or not music. You see, I'm talking about music.
He had a Freudian here. Yeah. So that's totally okay. Because Ruben, you know, originally comes actually out of the music biz, and I think he got carried away, which I think is a really good sign.
Ruben, I think we're going to have to bring some musicians in.
That's a good sign. Why not?
Right. You know, everything, yeah.
They have their favorite foods, and as far as I know, we're going to have an actor in very soon.
Yeah, hopefully real soon.
Well, you can disclose his name. Go ahead.
We'll talk to him tomorrow. We're going to be inviting Jose Yenke. And he is an actor from the movie Traffic. He played the torturer in that movie, and he's got a couple other roles. But that's the one he's best known as, and it was filmed here in San Diego in Tijuana. And we're going to be hanging out with him real soon and hopefully get him on the show. And he's got a whole lot of cool stuff that he's working on. He's got his own program, nonprofit, called Arts for a Better Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And great guy. Hopefully we'll be able to work with him a little closer. So so it's going to be, you know, food and beverage, acting, music, all that good stuff.
All that. You know, everything what touches the food biz is going to be part of that show.
Yeah, there you go.
Even at some times, people are going to go, what has the plumber to do? Well, I would tell you, he has to do a lot, because we had a hot water leak.
All right.
You know, and I tell you, that's inside the showbiz. The food biz.
It's got to be inside the
showbiz. Inside the showbiz food biz. So, oh, gosh.
So for those that don't know, you can find us on Facebook, Inside the Food Biz, and on Twitter and Instagram and all that good stuff as well. And we'll be launching the website, hopefully by the time this is out, insidethefoodbiz.com. You'll be able to find some of the archived the episodes and the interviews. And if you want to book Eric to come speak somewhere about the food business, come in, you know, I'm sure he'll love to do something like that. he'll be your keynote speaker for any kind of food and business expertise.
Yeah, but only if you have headphones on.
Right.
Okay.
Now I'm just inventing stuff.
No, but yeah, that's okay.
Make sure you also look up Savor Catering. This episode is brought to you by Savor Catering and SoCal Artisan Foods. There's going to be some staffing agency stuff going on, a whole lot of cool stuff happening. So make sure you stay tuned on our Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all that stuff, savorcater.com, and check us out on all our social media, because we always got some cool stuff going on. We're also working closer with the Schooner Bill of Rights here in Chula Vista. We'll have some exciting news coming up about some of that stuff. Eric's always involved in all kinds of stuff all over San Diego, South Bay, Chula Vista, you name it. So you can keep an eye on him and keep tabs with what he's got going on social media. You can find him pretty much everywhere on social media now. So make sure you find him, reach out to him. It is a good thing. So make sure you find us, savorcater.com. Find us on Facebook, Savor Catering Co. And anything else you want to plug up?
Well, you know, I think we're having a lot of fun with this show.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And yes, we are a for-profit company which does business with a lot of non-profit companies. And I think part of our soul is really ingrained in that we want to give back.
Yep.
Also to the community. We think that's a very important part. I'm Rotarian, you know, proud Rotarian. Mm-hmm. I would tell some people are going to say, what's a frigging Rotarian? Well, you know, look it up. You would be surprised. And we are not a secret handshaking
the Freemason
societies. Yeah. Or you said that. But, you know, one of the goals is also that if things are better in your business, and you know you're starting to find that success, don't forget there's a whole community out there which is not as fortunate. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's so important, you know, to come in, reach out, make it work, help, support, because you want to close that circle.
Yep.
You know, one thing I can tell you, it's very satisfying, makes you feel better.
Yeah. Well, in closing, and I'm not going to say this as Savor Catering. I'm going to say this as Ruben Torres. From the outside looking in, Savor Catering is what they have. There's a press release that just came out, kind of talking a little bit about Savor Catering being a community friendly, community based, catering service, full service catering service that just launched. But from the outside looking in, I do want to say that Savor Catering is more than a catering service. It is a business with heart and passion to help others. I know you and Tony have helped me. And you just each one of, you know, everyone in the staff here has their own personal stories on how Eric and Tony have helped helped everyone, even just from getting a job here. Everybody has their own stories on how they landed a job here. But it's a company with heart. It's not just a shell of a company that, hey, here we are to serve food. You guys go above and beyond that, and you really, you know, step out of the boundaries of what most owners would do to kind of go above and beyond to help the employees and the community. So those that want to know, stop by and see what Eric and Tony are doing here, and come visit the staff here. We have a complimentary tasting room. We have the recording studio here. We're doing all kinds of stuff here, but you guys are invited to come by, step in and say hi, but come get to know what Tony and Eric are doing here, because this isn't just a catering service, a catering company. They are a company with heart that does a lot more. So come by, step by and you know, step in and see Tony and Eric, just to learn a little bit more.
Well, obviously that was an open invitation, so
make an appointment.
But yes, no. But that's, you know, it's, you know, life has to have at least a couple of slivers of fun.
Yeah,
and if that's it, you
know, we have a lot of fun here.
Yeah, and we're sitting here and can enjoy and share. That's what it's really all about.
Yeah.
So, you know, dear listeners, I think we're coming to the end.
There it is.
How shall I say? We should finish this with a toast.
There
so,
you go. First episode, we are out. Make sure you subscribe to the show. Tell your friends about it. Share it. Give us a rating and a review. The reviews are going to help us grow up the charts on iTunes. So we appreciate any reviews. Subscribe, rate. All that good stuff, because that's what helps. So tell people, anybody you know that you might think may be a good fit for the show, make sure you reach out to us and let's see what we can schedule. This will be a weekly show. Maybe we'll throw in a couple extra little shows here and there, depending on what you know, what's what. But we're going to try to plan releasing one of these a week. And if you know anybody that's a good fit for the show, make sure you reach out to us. And other than that, we are done with our first episode of Inside the Food Biz. We are out. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned.